I'm very happy now to welcome Carolyn Clark Beadle. She is Executive Director of Assistance Dogs of the West. Alex Johansson is a dog trainer with that wonderful organization who is with us here. And Jane Bernard is a photographer, including a dog photographer. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having us.
It's great to have you. It's been a while. Well, I guess we had you on last year, shortly before Assistance Dogs of the West graduation, which this year is happening on Tuesday, the 18th of May at 6 o'clock at the Santa Fe Community Convention Center. Tell us about Assistance Dogs. What do Assistance Dogs do?
Mary Charlotte, Assistance Dogs are a particular type of very highly trained dog that work with people with physical, emotional, and developmental disabilities. So not to be confused with guide dogs that work with people that have visual impairments, or hearing dogs that work with people who have hearing impairments. So there are three major categories of dogs. Assistance dogs have been being trained here in the United States for probably between 35 and 40 years, and they have evolved to help lots of different kinds of disabilities over time as people look at what these amazing animals can do and understand that we could ask them to do a little bit more.
So there are, in your typical assistance dog, you have a lot of, what, retrievers?
Labrador retrievers and golden retrievers tend to be the breed of choice for the industry, and it kind of makes sense in that of the 400-plus breeds of dogs, those dogs went out to fetch something and bring it back to their owner with a soft mouth. So if we started assistance dogs to help people with physical mobility challenges and they needed to pick lots of things up and bring them back to people, that was a perfect choice.
Give us an example of somebody with, for example, mobility problems that uses an assistance dog and what their day is like and the role of that dog in their day.
The dog wakes up with them because the dog's pretty much on the same schedule as the person. The dog is probably going to fetch them whatever they need in the morning, be it clothes, shoes, or even help. Some people, they need help like getting out of bed. So the dog can be a brace or help clothe them. And then from there, whatever the person...
The dog can help clothe them?
They can hold a pant leg up or something, and then they can slip their leg if they're unable to do that for themselves. And the dog can also help undress the person, as they can just grab a sleeve of a shirt and pull it off.
Interesting point. I don't know how many dogs have colorblind issues, and you might look a little funny depending on if you let them pick your outfit.
I'm sure you can tell them what to get. I'm sure there's a little... easy ways to get around that.
Maybe you could color code it with meat smells.
This is just getting absurd.
Anyway, and so as the person goes through the day, what are some other things that the dog does?
First of all, the dog's going to help them be out in public because, as Carolyn said, we do have a lot of golden retrievers for that. There's that social barrier between people because everyone's had a golden retriever and known one. But when you see, say, a German Shepherd or something, or even them by themselves, you're going to be more intimidated. That's why we choose these dogs that people are accustomed to, so they might go up, pet the dog, converse with these people that they would never, they usually
ignore. Interesting. I thought you weren't supposed to pet somebody's assistance dog.
You're not supposed to, but people still can come up, and you can ask to pet a dog, and then if they give it, but it gives you that more incentive to talk to these people when most of the time you might just ignore them or walk away from them.
You know, one of the clients that I photographed with their dog said something really sweet. She said, "My dog opens doors for me in so many ways." So he literally helps her open doors as she's coming and going, but also she was in a wheelchair. She had MS, and as she became more and more debilitated, it was harder and harder for her emotionally to be out in public. And she said, with the dog, it started conversations, and instead of people being focused on her disability, they were focused on the dog, which was a wonderful thing for her. She said it gave her great confidence to
that
be out in public.
Actually could work us into the different kinds of dogs that Assistance Dogs of the West trains, because there is a specialty kind of dog that is working with people with psychiatric diagnoses.
And so the dog will say, "Tell me why you feel that way."
If his name is Freud, yes. But that's, you know, few and far between. What happens, though, as Jane is pointing out, is so many of our clients, it is heartwarming and heart-filling to hear what dogs can do because we are training them to do specific tasks. 50% of what the dog brings to their human partner is the task. 50% is the unconditional love, 24/7 relationship that we, many of us who have pets, understand and get out of this special bond that develops. So one of our recent psychiatric support dogs went to an individual with high panic anxiety, high depression, and almost, you know, borderline personality disorder. We, you know, don't need to define these kinds of things, but literally could not go out in public. And so what she said with tears in her eyes was, I have a huge part of my life back by virtue of having Fiona working with me, because all those places that scared me, I have a friend, I have a companion, I have a barrier. So it's a really interesting thought that what they do besides the task.
Alex, how do you train a dog to be a psychiatric assistance dog?
I think some of it kind of comes natural, because if the dog likes the person, they're going to be more inclined to support them in that way. And as we all know, if we have a pet, they can pretty much tell what kind of mood you're in. And if you're upset or you're down, the dog, or sometimes a cat even, but in this case a dog, is going to go over and try to its best to make you happy, whether that's try to get you out of bed for a walk. There's going to be the incentive to leave your house instead of just be a ball of mush in your bed. And in other ways, the dog, I don't know, I think I don't think you can really train it. I think it is just a natural thing that comes out of it.
Well, one of the training connections that we do make is like panic anxiety and or really clinical depression when it's extreme, the dog recognizes that behavior. And so there can be an alert that is trained to, okay, Alex, you know what, you're getting to that scary place. The behavior is starting to look like that. Therefore, you want to go get someplace safe so that you can go have your panic anxiety attack if you're going to, someplace safe instead of at the Santa Fe Baking Company.
Now, which is a very dangerous place. Now, the dogs, some of the dogs you have are for people with autism.
Correct. That's an interesting evolution that I'm going to say has taken place in the last 10 years. Now, there are so many scary figures out there about autism. And in the United States, there is a figure that one in somewhere between 150 and 200 children born has somewhere on the autism disorder spectrum. So there's lots of different varieties of that. But what has happened because of these numerous children that have these the challenge, which tends to be relative to any kind of transitions. Sensory transitions are very, very difficult. So sounds and new places and new faces are really difficult to work through. And what happens in the placement of an autism support dog, the child starts to develop a relationship with the animal that has no, minimal transitional activity. It's always a dog, and it's always your friend, and it's always going to be there, and it's not talking to you. So the relationship and the abilities that develop, the skills and abilities and behaviors with the child and the dog, then start to become generalized out into the public. We have a placement that one dog went to a set of twins that were little girls that were nonverbal, very difficult to deal, not going to school.
Both autistic,
7 years old. And the dog placement, they started talking to the dog. You can't say the dog did it, but the parent will say, my children did not speak. But
the dog created a safe space for the child.
It's the relationship, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's that kind of even. And safe is one word, but I don't want it to kind of be. At any rate, when you think about what that does, the other thing that many children with autism will do is they've got high energy, very high energy, and there's a lot of darting. And so there's a bracing ability with a leash to the belt of the child.
Oh, interesting.
Dog and child don't usually, until they get older and depending on what their development is, they're not alone. So the placement with autism support dogs is usually a family placement. And
So the dog is keeping the child on a leash instead of vice versa?
Correct. Yeah, and also, if there's this whole darting kind of thing where a child learns that, dog's going to pull back when it darts, and so it stops with the darting.
Right, it's a behavioral modification.
Correct.
We're talking about the assistance dogs of the West. Years ago, I read a long article about Temple Grandin, who is an autistic woman who ended up getting a PhD and is absolutely brilliant, and she found a stronger relationship with cows than with other human beings. She related to them, she understood them, and I wonder whether autism doesn't have as one of its, I thought after that, as one of its qualities, that that people who have it sometimes relate better to animals than to other people.
It autism is so broad in it's called a disorder spectrum or spectrum disorder, in that there is such a continuum and different kinds of people in different places along that, that, and we don't know enough about it, and I am so not an expert about autism. So we don't know enough about it to be able to really make generalizations. Temple Grandin continues to do great work with animals, and she is an enormous educator when it comes to that kind of connection. And the net out of this is the brain is so incredibly complex, as we all know, that there are different parts that work with different different individuals.
So we have people working with dogs, working with people who have psychiatric disorders, with autism, with mobility problems of various kinds. You also have dogs working with people who regularly get seizures, who have seizure disorders.
Yes, we do. And that's a very interesting and important relationship, in that depending on the person's seizure disorder challenge, dogs will be trained. All dogs are trained to respond. So they will recognize when it occurs. And sometimes they are trained specifically on tasks to perform to pull the person out of the seizure. Sometimes people's seizures last for extended periods of time, and a dog could be licking the face or doing something to help the person come out of the seizure. Then post...
Really?
Yeah. And that's specific... In all of our training, when the dog is matched with the individual, the specifics are finished, if you will. So the dogs all learn the standard 90 commands, which is outrageously intense. And then as they get their human partner, what the human partner's needs are translated into the specific tasks that each dog will perform. So dogs can help pull the person out of the seizure, and then they help with... After the seizure, there's a whole lot of retrieval, balance, bracing activity that it is required, you know, could be required.
Do they call 911?
They can if there's a 911 on the phone. Seriously?
Really?
There's a 911 button on many phones for people with disabilities, and dogs are trained to hit the 911 button.
Really? Yeah. So you trained them, Alex, to do that?
Yep. They can also get a phone if it doesn't have a 911 button. But going back to what Carolyn was saying about how the end of the right as that placement time, that's where the dog gets the specialized commands. They also learn that even after placement, because the dog I just finished training, Jackson, he went to someone, and on his own ability, he has been able to detect seizures and starting to alert the family on them. And that was something seizures that we hadn't quite. We didn't fully train that in while we trained him. He just started doing that on his own with the family.
So the point there is there's no guarantee that a dog who is working with a seizure person will alert to the onset of seizures. So that means it's giving the person some pre-warning that there is a seizure coming on. There is no guarantee. Right now, 100% of the dogs that we have placed with people with seizure disorders alert. And that gets back to the relationship that the animal has with the person and that astounding observational skill that dogs have. So they're watching us because we are their people. And when they see that strange behavior, they're going to start doing an alert.
What abilities do dogs have that are stronger than human beings have that help them be assistance dogs?
I would say scent. That would be the biggest one, because that... doesn't just help for any one ability of training. It's for everything. Seizure alert, diabetic alert, anything. And then also there's something about safety, that knowing that there's, because whenever someone is around a house, that people with dogs are going to feel a little safer. And if you're in a city, you're going to know that the dog is going to be able to smell or hear anyone that comes up. So you'll know in advance. That's just a little thing to just reassure someone at the home front, so to speak.
There are phrases in the language like, you could smell fear. Can dogs really smell things like that? Can they smell when somebody's, for example, dangerous in some way?
There's so much chemical change in the human body that is related to scent. And the number of, you know, multiplier of the dog's ability to smell as compared to the humans is 250,
something like
450
that.
Times
it's
our
ridiculous.
Ability. It is quantum in its you know, its scope. So it dogs, and that's why, you know, when you think about your dog going out on the walk and you get a little irritated because it's sniffing at everything, that is heaven, because they have these plus
huge
dogs,
olfactory.
They smell out of both sides that we don't. We're smelling out of one. They smell out of both nostrils.
Oh, so they have
nostrils.
They can tell what direction.
Binostral yeah.
Isn't
smelling.
Directional smell.
Who knew?
Who knew? It's so fascinating. The more you learn about what these abilities are, and then, once again, how do you place them in service to people? What's happening is people who have needs that have seen dogs working in other, you know, to support other disabilities say, well, you know, could you help me with whatever it is? I wanted to go back one second to we talked about the psychiatric support dogs. A big, huge challenge right now is PTSD from our returning veterans, and that's gigantic. And they're learning. So dogs are being trained to pop the corner, or, you know, look at the perimeter seriously, to follow what the behaviors were that have created some of the anxiety in the veterans. So the dog, if you wake up in the middle of the night and you think that you're being bombed, or that there's an IED around the corner, and your dog is sitting there sleeping, you know you're okay.
Yeah.
There's so many little subtle things that go into this. And the question about, you know, what besides scent, what do dogs have? Dogs have the strongest animal relationship with humans, and so they have learned to watch us in a way that we don't watch people. With the same level.
One of the terrible and sad problems of post-traumatic stress disorder and combat trauma and all of that is that sometimes people come back and they abuse the people they love the most. Have you had any problems with people abusing dogs?
In the world of placing dogs with returning veterans, we're learning as an industry. And what we found is it takes a while to get to a place of stability, emotional and life stability, to be able to have those kind of relationships. So dogs that are placed with people that are in their first year of returning, it's not necessarily successful. And so we are not doing that any longer. We're waiting. And there are a lot of questions that are asked. In the application process to become a client with any service dog agency, and particularly with Assistance Dogs of the West, we ask a whole lot of questions that get around how do you deal with fear, anger, so that we know, because it's not going to be successful, and it certainly isn't going to be healthy to have a relationship if you don't have the ability to do it.
So the Assistance Dogs of the West graduation is a week from today. It's Tuesday, the 18th of May at 6 o'clock at the Santa Fe Community Convention Center. And one of the wonderful things that you all are doing together is you're not only making it a community event, but you're bringing in community support. And one of the wonderful ways that you're doing that is with Jane Bernard, who is sitting here with us. You are a dog photographer, and I'm sorry that we can't show your work here on the air, because it is absolutely beautiful. Dog portraits, yeah, whatever, you know, all dogs are cute, you take a picture. These are beautiful dog portraits.
Well, thank you. I really enjoy, and actually, I'm really a documentary photographer, and I have, over the years, photographed the clients and the dogs of Assistance Dogs of the West pro bono for ADW. So it's not something that I've really done much of other than for Assistance Dogs of the West. I guess you could say my specialty is photographing people, but I'm a huge dog lover, and I've always taken lots of pictures of my own dogs. And what I look for when I am photographing a dog is I'm trying to show its personality, its quirks, its what's playful, what's unique, what's interesting about that animal, which is something that I've always used when photographing people.
And so what are you doing with Assistance Dogs right now?
Well, I am volunteering my services.
We love that.
I wanted to help them with their fund drive. So if people donate a certain amount of money, one of the things that they will receive at no cost is a portrait setting of their dog for free, and a 5x7 portrait, and it helps Assistance Dogs of the West.
Very nice.
So I wanted to think of a creative way to help the organization, and hopefully drive a little buzz and get people excited about donating money. I feel like they're really a phenomenal organization because not only are they working with people with disabilities and with dogs, but they're also working with kids. They teach kids how to train the assistance dogs. It's part of their program. So they're very, it's almost a multidisciplinary approach to helping the community.
What is it like for you? You've been training dogs, Alex, since you were 12 years old. You just turned 18.
Yep.
6 years worth of dog training. What have you learned? What are some of the main skills that you have as a dog trainer?
Patience is a big thing, and being able to read the dog. That's another thing. Not only can I read dogs better from 6 years, I've noticed things in people's body motion, because when you're training a dog, you have to know when they're stressed out, if there's something wrong, how they hold their tail. All this stuff tells you what they're feeling at any given time, so you can be more successful for a training with a dog.
We have every year probably about 250 kids in 18 different programs across the state of New Mexico, mostly central, Albuquerque, Santa Fe, and up into Rio Riba County. And one of the things I want to give big accolades to Alex is there are people that have been student trainers that have been involved in the program that demonstrate a certain level of commitment and talent and skill. And those, there are a handful of them at any given time, and we give some of these student trainers teaching assistant positions, and that turns them into peer coaches and mentors to student trainers, which when you stop and think about it, here they're learning how to learn and then they're learning how to teach. So they've learned how to learn, they've learned how to train, they learn how to teach. And also that ability to, and I'm going to say, you know, you're a teenager, you can be a pain, but working with your peers and with some of the younger student trainers that are in there, there is a compassion level, not only compassion for the folks with disabilities where the dogs are going to go, but a higher level of compassion and patience, however, whatever words you want to use, for people of your own age group. And the progression, evolution, whatever, the abilities that you guys, the Alexes of the world, and as I say, there's only a handful, what they demonstrate every year is inspiring. You want to say, good job.
Thank you.
Jane Bernard, what is your website?
Well, you can look at my dog portraits at janebernard.com/dogs with a capital D, lowercase, O-G-S. And I would encourage people to come to the graduation if they don't know much about the organization. It's a really, really special, heartwarming, especially in these times where there's so much bad news out there. This is good news.
And you will take a picture of their dog
if they make a donation.
Excellent. Carolyn Clark Beadle is Executive Director of Assistance Dogs of the West. Alex Johansson is a dog trainer with that group. And Jane Bernard is a photographer. And once again, on Tuesday, the 18th of May at 6 o'clock at the Santa Fe Convention Center, Community Convention Center, is the Assistance Dogs of the West graduation, which will be populated by the cutest dogs ever. And if you want to find out more information, you can go to assistancedogsofthewest.org. I shouldn't have said cutest, probably most competent as well as cute.
Pretty much, yeah.
But they're pretty cute.
And Jane's pictures show that.
They certainly do. Thank you all. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And my own email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Thanks to Brian Highhill for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz. Thank you.